Wow, that was a screwed up introduction. Anyway, this is the Creatively Endeavored Inside Pulse Wrestling Pulsecast. Obviously, we are in our special top five episode of top five entrance themes, and as you know, one of them is going to be Randy Orton's theme music. Blog Talk Radio has this fun feature where you only can upload certain video or certain audio tracks while you're 15 minutes before showtime. So I am trying to do all of these at once, and obviously it did not work out the way I wanted it to. But one way or another, we are making this work, and I am your host, Matthew Herrick, with InsidePulse.com and CreativelyEndeavored.com. Joined again this week with my writers from Inside Pulse and Creatively Endeavored, both Justin and Cam. What's going on, fellas?
Oh, nothing much here. Just getting ready. Hopefully we don't have any more random music appearances during the show. But you never know what can happen on the Creatively Endeavored podcast.
Oh, we are absolutely going to have random music appearances. I'm hoping we don't drop out like we did last week. But as far as the music goes, I am not guaranteeing anything. As of right now, after that beautiful introduction, I am just hoping and praying that something happens and some music plays at some point. But while I'm working on these, a couple more, let's get through a quick Raw review. Obviously, not much happened. I honestly want to talk a little bit about the spoilers for SmackDown. So for people who don't like spoilers or are listening to this before SmackDown tomorrow night, just kind of forward ahead about 10-15 minutes, and then we'll get right into our top five. First of all, for Raw, general thoughts, thumbs up, thumbs down, what you guys think of Raw coming from London, or was it London this week? Yeah, it was London this week. What do you think, Justin?
I'd say it was a thumbs in the middle show. I know definitely the six-man tag, if you can check it out. That was a good match. Obviously, the Shield continues to have good matches. It looks like no matter who they pair across with them, put them across the ring. So that was a good match. I know some people like Dolph Ziggler and Chris Jericho, I thought they've had better. I wasn't that big of a fan of that match. It was good. It wasn't anything you would expect better from them if it was me. As far as the crowd goes, I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago, or last week now, about the crowd reactions. And as I was watching the show, I thought I would have liked it better, but it just came off as, I kind of want to say, forced was the word for it, but it just seems like, okay, they're doing it again. You know, you're in the chance, there's the wave. Wasn't that into it as I was in New Jersey. Of course, you know, I was in New Jersey live, so I have a whole different experience compared to, obviously, you two who are watching it. But I thought it was thumbs in the middle. Ryback was okay during his promo. Just, I don't like the constant rolling out Mick Foley when somebody has to get a heel turn across. But average show at best, nothing too great except probably the six-man tag.
Yeah, I had the same feeling. It was something that I tried to bring up last week before Blog Talk Radio decided it wasn't in business anymore. As Junkyard Dog again plays in the background. What I was saying last week before we got cut off was I was a little worried about the fact that they were going to England and they were going into the O2 Arena and them expecting what we saw in New Jersey and them trying to recreate what happened. And I was worried WWE was putting a little too much stock into that and wouldn't continue on with storylines and continue on with what they had planned for the next couple months. I thought that you would see more Fandango, who was really over, and you wouldn't see Randy Orton, you wouldn't see Sheamus, which we didn't see. They said it was because they were at a SmackDown live event, but I have a feeling that if they didn't get that reaction in New Jersey, they would have flown them in the way they did the Shield and Fandango. But yeah, it was one of those where it didn't live up to the hype that a lot of people expected, but I was okay with that. I wanted to see a natural Raw. I wanted to see just one we were going to see every week. I didn't want to see something abnormal and something that was special to that certain place or certain demographic. Cam, what did you think?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys are like big soccer buffs as I am, but the English crowd, and I'm a big fan of like the English Premier League, but the English fans will do just about anything to make sure they're more of a show than what's actually going on. I think they really did try to force what they were trying to get across, which, you know, it wasn't really as natural as they wanted it to be, but they were trying to force it. The WWE is like a big worldwide global effect, so I just, it's kind of, you know, as an American fan, I kind of wish that this Raw was in America because of the kind of spoilers. It was kind of hard to stay away from anything that happened. But other than that, yeah, it was a decent show. You know, it's, we're in the middle on the Extreme Rules path, so yeah, just kind of like a middle show trying to push the feuds they're going to start pushing.
Yeah, what I really wanted to talk about, just coming out of this show, obviously, there wasn't really anything too special that happened. I know, Justin, you were a little down on the Ryback segment. I was happy with it. I thought it showed that he could hold his own, and that the fact that the pre-tape promo that they did 2 weeks ago wasn't really necessary. I was surprised after seeing him in the ring live to tape, but live, he could actually go out there and handle himself. I mean, there's other guys that are a hell of a lot worse than he was and just going back and forth with Mick Foley. So I was surprised with that. But what really stood out to me, and it was something that I was talking about while watching the show, was the fact that Undertaker in the six-man tag only really worked with Dean Ambrose. He had spots, obviously, with Roman Reigns and with Seth Rollins, but the only time he tagged in and the only lengthy part of the match he had was with Ambrose. And I don't know if this was Undertaker, Mark Calloway going to the officials and saying, I want to work with this kid, or it was them saying, hey, we see a lot in him. Would you mind being our measuring stick again and going and seeing how well he does? Now, getting into the spoilers for SmackDown, they're having a one-on-one match that is going to be the main event of the show. And this is not only The Undertaker's first match on SmackDown in, I think, over 3 years, probably close to 5 years, but it's also the first singles match any member of The Shield have had on a WWE roster. Now, to me, that's huge. I mean, that's just showing a lot of faith in this young guy who's 27 years old, who obviously anybody who's seen him on the indies or in FCW or PWG or CZW or in NXT, they know the talent they're getting. But the fact that you're putting him into the ring with The Undertaker, and The Undertaker, we're just speculating here, but The Undertaker saying that he wants to work with them, I think that's a giant leap of faith and a giant seal of approval for this guy who is still within what the six to 7 months of his WWE career as far as the main roster goes. I don't know, Cam, what was your gut reaction after hearing about that?
The day that the WWE signed Dean Ambrose, John Moxley, however you want to call him, I just knew that's the new CM Punk, that is the guy. And I think that the WWE doesn't want to make the same mistake that they made with CM Punk. I think that they know what they have. I think that, yes, maybe probably The Undertaker was the measuring stick, and they're like, all right, this guy can work, even though I think they already knew that. They just wanted someone's seal of approval. I think that if The Shield does break up before the year's over or whenever it comes, that I think the only guy that we're really going to see a big push out of is Dean Ambrose, because Dean Ambrose is money. And, yes, it's basically, it's going to be Dean Ambrose. He is going to be the next CM Punk, in my opinion.
See, I go a little bit different before I get to you, Justin, because I know you have a lot about this, too. Obviously, we're going to get CM Punk comparisons. I mean, but to me, as big of a CM Punk fan as I am, both in the ring, out of the ring, on the mic, character-wise, psychology-wise, I think he's one of the best we've seen in a decade. Ambrose's mind for not only selling, but in-ring psychology, facial expressions, being able, I mean, there was just one spot at WrestleMania six-man tag where instead of running over to his partners to tag somebody in, he just did a forward roll because he knew that would be quicker and show more continuity between their team. I mean, just something as little as that, I think, shows leaps and bounds this psychology and the professionalism and the just natural ability this guy has, and how more over he may be than CM Punk is now, and the potential this guy has to be the best in the WWE. Now, what you said, that he's going to be the only one to really break out. Honestly, I can see Roman Reigns going in the middle of the road, going as their big guy, their big muscle guy, and that's fine. I really do see Seth Rollins as being WWE's answer to Jeff Hardy. I think he's got the look, the charisma. He's got the people, the female vote, if you want to call it that. I mean, in NXT, you would always hear the catcalls and the screams whenever he would enter the arena. They were always billing him as the eccentric, just a kind of walks to the beat of his own drum type idea. So he is their answer to Jeff Hardy. I mean, he can pull off all the high spots. He does them all flawlessly. He's the next charismatic enigma, if you want to call him that, stealing from TNA. So I do see Dean Ambrose being launched into a major heel role, but I don't see that for Seth Rollins. I think this is as far as you're going to go with him as a heel, and as soon as they turn on babyface, they're going to skyrocket him. Justin, what do you have to say about any of the members of the Shield, really?
I agree. I mean, anytime you get to wrestle one-on-one with The Undertaker, especially now at this point in his career where he's a part-timer, is a huge, obviously, backing from the WWE, and you know that The Undertaker had to sign off on it in order to wrestle him. I mean, The Undertaker's just not going to go out there and wrestle Heath Slater or Jinder Mahal. If he's going to wrestle somebody, he's probably going to want to have a say in it. And for Dean Ambrose to be the man and get the call and say, yeah, I want to wrestle him, is a big step forward for him. I agree. I mean, I've seen bits and pieces of Dean Ambrose on the indie scene. I've liked his work. Like I said, he's just got those expressions and those facial expressions and those movements that just kind of make him stick out, kind of like you guys said, like a CM Punk kind of thing. As far as everybody from the Shield breaking out, I agree with you, Matt. I think Roman Reigns has kind of like that big man impact moves that could get him over, similar to like a Batista when he started rising to power and people started getting behind him when he was in Evolution. And then they finally turned him face and became a megastar. I can see something like that with Roman Reigns happening. And I agree with Seth Rollins that he's going to be the guy that, like you said, is going to be going all out with the crazy spots, and maybe if he'll be in ladder matches doing dives and jumps off ladders and getting the crowd behind him. And if he catches on similar to what Jeff Hardy did during his rise to the top, he could obviously maybe get a main event push up there. I don't know if he'll ever be a WWE World Champion, but granted, I said the same thing about Jeff Hardy when he was in the Hardy Boys too, and he became one of those. So it's obviously time will tell. I still think when the Shield does break up, I think there is potential for all of them. Obviously, as you just said, with everybody having their own unique characteristics, which is a good thing. When you have a group of three guys, everybody sticks out differently. That's what you want. You want each have their own little quirk or gimmick that gets them over, and obviously all three of them do. So there's definitely potential for all of them down the line. We just got to hope that the WWE knows it, and obviously I think they do, with the Shield constantly going over the top stars and now Ambrose facing The Undertaker one-on-one. So hopefully, this time next year, if the Shield is still around, we're talking about them and how great they are, or if they're disbanded, we're talking about the big pushes that they've gotten and where each of them are going in a separate career path.
Now, Justin, obviously we're seeing with these London shows that they took on Team Hell No and they took on Undertaker, and now they're going one-on-one with Undertaker. Undertaker seems like a step up, and now they're going to take a step back, probably going for Team Hell No and the tag team titles. Do you feel like this is a good progression for them to go after the tag team titles, or would you prefer them to keep facing top-level talent and main event talent until eventually somebody beats them and they split up, or they add a fourth member, a fourth leader, or something like that, and they split up? Or where do you see these three guys going over the next 3 to 6 months?
I think the tag team titles is a good starter step. I think anytime you can get a title around your waist, it's a good thing. I mean, obviously seeing the Shield and the Ring of Top Stars and going over them is good, but I think as much as the tag titles' value have been diminished in the last few years, I think anytime you can even just have a belt around them like that is a good thing for them. As far as where they're going, I think obviously I would assume or at least hope maybe that the WWE will invoke a Freebird rule with them when they win the tag titles, where it's any two members of the group can defend the titles at any time. As far as a fourth member goes, I'm not sold on it because as a group they haven't lost yet. So what would be the point of adding a fourth member to the group unless it's going to be somebody who, even though we've already kind of known that Paul Heyman's been behind them, it's something where the next is where they have somebody that was their official leader and they've been taking orders from, and maybe then we'll actually figure it out in like the Nexus, where we have no idea to this day still who the person was that was behind them. So if they're going to add a fourth member or a fourth person to the group, I would prefer it to be somebody that would be found out as the leader and the man officially behind it, rather than just another call-up from NXT, because as we've seen so far, the Shield doesn't need a fourth member. They've been doing perfectly fine on their own, and they're undefeated. So that's what I think. If there's going to be a fourth member, it better be somebody big, and it better be somebody that's kind of revealed as the head man, the head leader, the man hanging out the orders of the group.
Yeah, I had an idea, and it was just something that I was just tossing around while reading the spoilers for Sunday or tomorrow, God, not Sunday, and then actually confirming the fact that it is a televised match between Ambrose and Undertaker for the main event of SmackDown, was just the idea of, we know CM Punk's going to be gone for a while, and the general feeling is that being paired with Paul Heyman and everything else, that he may come back and join them and whatever, be their leader or endorse them or whatever it is. For me, I think we've seen, I mean, it hasn't even been that long of a run, but we've seen Punk take on every babyface that the WWE has right now. And he got to the point where he was the only one to be able to face The Undertaker, because there were no other babyfaces for him to face, and there were no real heels for Undertaker to face, at least not at his level. So for me, I had a brainwave of why not bring him back and tease the fact that maybe he could be a heel and join them or whatever it is, but actually bring him back and say, and keep these three guys undefeated and have them be tag team champions or whatever it is, and have them come back and say, hey, I started where you guys were. You guys got the rocket shoved up your asses and were punched right into the main event scene, whereas I busted my ass in developmental and worked my way up from the bottom and constantly got the rug pulled out from under me. So I don't understand why you three think that you're better than anyone else when you may have pinned everybody in the WWE except for me. And here you have indie darlings versus indie darlings, and you have a babyface CM Punk going against three guys he could probably pull out some really damn good matches against, and three fresh faces for him to work against. Throw in maybe Daniel Bryan, or throw in if they bring up Cassius Ohno or something of that nature, and all of a sudden you have this whole new, I mean, it's a dream scenario for indie fans of all new indie darlings facing off against each other. But even if you keep up those four guys of just Punk and the Shield, I think you have some depth that you can work with there that has not been touched upon at all yet, because they've only really played the Paul Heyman card. They haven't really played the Punk card. So I don't know. It was, like I said, it was just something, it was an idea that I came up with this afternoon that really hasn't been flushed out and really thought too thoroughly about. But Cam, what do you see the Shield going through for the next 3 to 6 months? Or CM Punk, for that matter?
Just to backtrack just a little bit. Yeah, Jeff Hardy was like a great champion and all that stuff. I think Seth Rollins has the potential to be a great champion, but I just think Dean Ambrose has like that main event go against John Cena appeal. I don't think Seth Rollins really has that, neither does Roman Reigns. But to move ahead, I think that since they don't really care about the mid-card titles and they don't care about any of the mid-card wrestlers, I think the Shield's going to have all the mid-card titles. I think around SummerSlam, I think they'll just all three of them carrying four different titles, you know, just picking and choosing, being cocky, all like when Shawn Michaels had the had all four titles and, you know, just pick and choose whatever title he'd want to come out with and defend or whatever, something like that. I think if the Shield is going to break up and they need to come up with a creative way to do it other than trying to use CM Punk, Paul Heyman, something like that, would be for someone to get, you know, just too cocky with holding all the titles. Probably someone maybe like Seth Rollins. I think he is a better babyface. I think him maybe just getting cocky and then kicking him out of the group, I guess, to, for like lack of a better word, and then just have like the breakup and then watch Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins have singles matches, because it's just what the WWE audience needs to see, because I'm sure a lot of fans didn't see it on NXT when they fought for the, when they're having their matches before the NXT title was around, and then all the matches they've had on the indie scene under different wrestling names. But yeah, I like the idea of using CM Punk. Like you said, Matt, he has basically faced everyone. The only person he hasn't really faced is Sheamus, and I'm not really too fond of Sheamus. I wouldn't care about a feud like that. So I think something, yeah, to maybe keep him relevant, maybe him being teaming up or something like that. But yeah, I think that the Shield will dominate all summer and until they break up and then expand as singles wrestlers next year.
Yeah, the one thing I think about CM Punk is, and going back to the idea of him coming back as babyface, is that his final promo really was not heelish at all. I likened it to the Shawn Michaels Lost My Smile promo, where it was, didn't really have a reason to leave. It was just, he is just like, I can't do this anymore, so I don't know what I'm doing anymore, so I'm taking off. So all you have to do is throw together one video package and you garner sympathy for this guy, and obviously when he comes back, the second his music plays, he's going to get a mass pop. So to bring him back as a heel, I think it's going to be hard, unless they have him come back with Heyman and Lesnar and maybe have him interfere in a Brock Lesnar match. I could see that happening. That might be the only way that they can keep him as a heel. But the way he acted and just the downtrodden puppy dog look that he had, and just having to walk away from wrestling and walk away from Raw and just saying, and basically just saying, I'm not doing this anymore, really leads to a babyface return more so than a heel return. I just thought this was one way to do it. Obviously, there's 100 different ways to do it. He could come back and save John Cena, which would automatically, I don't know, could put you as a babyface or as a heel, depending on what arena you showed up in. But yeah, so it should be interesting just looking at some of the new talent coming in. Hopefully they're going to be bringing up a couple new people. I know they've been talking about Richie Steamboat forever. They've been talking about Cassius Ohno, some of the other guys. The problem is if these guys get called up, unfortunately we're going to be seeing a lot less of some of the other people that we want to see. Antonio Cesaro is getting shot down the roster quicker than you can even blink. Guys like Justin Gabriel, who are fantastic in the ring, aren't going to get another shot. Tyson Kidd, who hopefully when he comes back from injury, he'll get a run at something, but it doesn't look good. So there are a lot of talented people on the roster right now, and as much as we want to see new blood, some of these talented guys are going to get either released or dropped down or just lost in the shuffle. So it's going to be an interesting couple of months leading into the new Payback pay-per-view and then SummerSlam after that, because they really want to build to SummerSlam. That's their big pay-per-view. They're building SummerSlam up as WrestleMania 2, even more so than Rumble or Survivor Series. So stay tuned, definitely, at the Payback pay-per-view. I expect to see a lot going on during that. Extreme Rules, not so much, but this new pay-per-view and then leading into SummerSlam and Money in the Bank, I think we're going to see a lot of different things going on. But that's not the topic of today's show. The topic of today's show is top five entrance songs. Personal favorite entrance songs, not top five entrance songs, because then I think my list would be completely different. These are our own personal favorites. These are the ones that we pop for. These are the ones that as soon as we heard them, we got excited. It's nostalgic. It's fun. It's just something that it's different. It's something that we wanted to do. Like I said, if this was just top five entrance songs, I think a lot of our choices would be the same. The other disclaimer was none of our fives could be the same. So we have 15 different entrance musics. There was a lot of debate and a lot of discussion, a lot of anger over these five entrance songs. So we will obviously get into that once we hit them. But yeah, we are gonna start off with these. How it's gonna play out? I'm just gonna toss it to whoever's next. You're just gonna say whatever it is, your number five or whatever it is, who it is. And actually, you don't even say who it is. I'll just play it for you, and you'll know which number it is, and then you can go right in talking about why this is your number five. And it should be a fun show, and it's one of those shows where once we post this up there for you guys in the archive and on iTunes, we want to hear back from you. We want to know your top five. We want to know what really got you what theme song really got you excited, because you know your favorite guy was coming out, or you knew something was going to happen, because the great Stone Cold Steve Austin quote was, when you hear the glass break, it's your ass. And that's the type of thing that is like, you want to know. Once you hear that first beat, or once you hear that music coming, that's what you know, something's going to happen. And as JR used to say, business is about to pick up. So that's what we're going with, and that's the fun part of this week's show. And we're going to kick it off right away. I'm going to just choose randomly from the top five, and whoever it is, right when I start dropping down the music, just tell us what song it is. Obviously, people will pretty much be able to pick out what song it is. But tell us why it's your number five, and then we'll chime in afterwards. So here we go with one of the number fives.
Stand back! There's a hurricane coming through!
With the WWE, he was one of the better mid-card talents.
Stand back! There's a hurricane coming through!
I guess we've talked about before on this podcast about the need for more characters and the need for more fun in WWE, and I thought the Hurricane was definitely someone that was fun, especially with all his stuff in the back about, you know, being a private detective and all that stuff. I just thought he was a great character and just always will be overlooked, in my opinion.
Obviously, I'm having difficulties with this audio. But yes, the Hurricane, it was one of those, he was a character that, he was a character when there were no characters. It came out of nowhere. I'll always remember his feud with The Rock that just really came out of left field and had no real reasoning behind it except the fact that The Rock was like, hey, this will be kind of fun. So I'll always remember that, and I'll always remember him trying to double choke slam Triple H and Stone Cold Steve Austin in the Royal Rumble. I think those two things, that and his tag team with Rosie, the superhero in training, always a nice little thing. His backstage interviewing as Shane Helms on ECW. I remember all this. This was all the time I was working at WWE. I had to cut a lot of those backstage things with Shane Helms on ECW. So, it was interesting time in WWE. It was, like I said, it was a time when characters just didn't happen. And to have a superhero on your roster and to have him in feuds with The Rock and to have a tag team and a tag team championship, it really showed how a guy could stand out by being different. And yeah, he was a good talent in the ring, and he really was able to make that character work. Justin, have anything to add?
No, just to agree with what you guys said. You know, I don't have a problem with characters in wrestling, and I thought the Hurricane was a good one. And like you said, when he started interacting and feeding with The Rock, I remember even watching it back then, because, you know, but what? You know, the Hurricane's the Hurricane, and that's The Rock. He doesn't feud with mid-card guys, and he made it work, and he even, and the Hurricane even beat The Rock, which was, like, amazing to think about at that time, knowing that, like, you know, The Rock was, I believe he was at the part-time point, starting the part-time point of his WWE career, not that
Yeah, it was
point.
Right before WrestleMania 19, so it was right before they left, yeah.
Yeah, no, but yeah, you know, you don't really see that nowadays, seeing random, like, mid-carders like that beating main eventers just out of nowhere, or even just having a brief little mini-feud with them on TV. So, yeah, definitely, I think the Hurricane was a good talent. He's good for what he was in the WWE.
Yeah, I think the closest we've seen, in, especially in recent history, and it was even beating a main eventer. Well, technically, I guess you consider Ray Barrett a main eventer. He did main event a bunch of pay-per-views with Randy Orton and John Cena. But was with Bo Dallas just randomly pinning him, and now Bo Dallas is gone now. It doesn't help that he came in with absolutely no gimmick whatsoever, and it just, I was like, okay, you're beating the IC champion. What the hell? But yeah, like I said, the Hurricane was something different. It was something cool. And it's definitely one that sticks in your mind afterwards. Let's go to the next number five. All right, I have something interesting to add to this one once it gets played. And obviously, I was going to play this music all the way through when we're talking about it, but Blog Talk Radio doesn't like when I try to turn down the music, so I'm just going to have to stop it once we recognize what song it is. I'm sorry, I was rocking out to that, so I let that one go on farther than usual. some of these, you might just lose me in it because I'm just sitting here just listening to the song. But anyway, go ahead. I know that's Justin. That's your number five.
obviously, if you don't know it, you might be listening to wrestling for the first time ever. But that is Real American by Hulk Hogan. You know, obviously being 25 right now, you know, Hulk Hogan was my childhood. It's the first theme song you think about really looking back in the early 90s WWE, at least for me. I mean, you know, Hulk Hogan was the guy back then, and that was his theme song, and it's one of those things you always, you know, I kind of think to myself when you're a kid, you walk out, you walk around your house pretending you were Hulk Hogan. It's just obviously the kid in you thinking about that most of the time, and even when he still used it when he was back in the WWE for a couple of times, he was there. Like at WrestleMania 21 when he came out, and the pop that music got. I think even if he came back today in the WWE and that music started playing, the pop would be humongous. It's the one theme song, one of the few theme songs you recognize instantly the second you hear that first beat. It's part of my childhood. It's obviously, I think, one of the better theme songs they put out.
Cam, I want to hear your thoughts before I throw in a little tidbit of knowledge that might blow Justin's brain here.
Just like Justin said, I'm a huge Hulk Hogan mark. I am actually considering going to a TNA event in California just to see Hulk Hogan, actually. That is how much of a fan of Hulk Hogan I am. I pay to see a company that don't even watch on TV regularly and attend one of their TV tapings just to see Hulk Hogan in person.
Trust me, it's not worth it.
I know, just to see Hulk Hogan in person, it's not worth it, I don't even watch the product, but...
I went to Impact in Orlando, and it was one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, it's Hulk Hogan, and he came out, and I thought he was going to die on the way down to the ring. So, hopefully he got better since then, but just watching my wife sitting next to me, she's like, oh dear God, I don't think he's going to make it. So, it's kind of nice just to think back now and have the memories of him as a kid and being able to see him and everything else. But if you go to see him now, don't get your hopes up. It really falls far below your expectations. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, they're doing like if you buy one of like the $50 tickets, you get to meet Jeff Hardy and Bully Ray and Hulk Hogan and someone else or whatever. So I was like, okay, I'll pay $50 to meet Hulk Hogan. Anyways, I'm just a little surprised it didn't make your list a little higher, Justin. I was going to put this in my list, but like Matt said at the beginning, we had to bicker and fight and yell at each other on the internet to pick and choose our spots. So yeah, just huge Hulk Hogan fan.
Yep, it's only one track for first and then first come, first serve. Anyway, the thing I wanted to bring up about that song, because I am looking at our good friend Widjo from Inside Pulse sent me all of the old, well, this would have been originally on vinyl, but I have all the old CDs from the original WWF era of WrestleMania, the album. I have the wrestling album. I know I have WWF Full Metal around here somewhere. But looking at the wrestling album, and I listened to it, and it, if you ever go back and listen to it again, it's the original one they released in 1985. But in between all of the songs, Jesse Ventura, Gene Okerlund, and Vince McMahon are actually doing commentary about the song.
Oh, yes.
In between the songs. And Real American was originally written and given to Mike Rotundo and Barry Windham as the All-American Boys, written by Derringer. And obviously, they did not last very long in the WWF, at least not as the All-American Boys. So that song, honestly, that song originally was not meant for Hulk Hogan, and it was going to a random generic United States-themed tag team. And now it's a global iconic song that anytime you hear it, you just picture him walking around with an American flag. And it blows my mind, because I remember listening to this on cassette tape and going, who the hell is this Windham and Rotundo they're talking about? This song is for Hulk Hogan. What are you talking about? Going back and listening to it again on CD and hearing all the commentary and listening to it straight through as I was converting them onto my computer, I just thought that was hysterical. It's the fact that this song is so iconic and so just pigeonholed for Hulk Hogan that and originally had absolutely nothing to do with him whatsoever. That was a fun little fact that blew my mind, and it was something I think that I knew of a long time ago, and just it just wipes it from your memory, because anytime you see Hulk Hogan, that's the song that pops into your head. I don't care if you grew up with the NWO. You go back and watch Hulk Hogan in DVDs, that's the song that's going to pop in your head. But anyway, let's get to the next number five. Obviously, it will be my number five, because we already got to the other two. Okay, we don't have to listen too much to that one because it just goes over and over and over again, but that is Mr. Perfect. His just perfect theme, I think it's called like the Perfect Twist or something generic like that. But yeah, that was my number five. Obviously a 1980s theme song, a Jim Johnson original that is very reminiscent. It feels like it was stolen from the 2001 Space Odyssey that Ric Flair was coming out to in the NWA at that time, but it fit his character so perfectly. Wow, no pun intended there. But yes, it fit his character to like a glove. He came out, he had that cocky look on his face. He was able to slowly walk down to the ring and spit his gum out onto a random kid's head. He probably hated him even more after that. Throw the towel over his shoulder for Bobby Heenan to catch. I mean, that song to me was just one of those where as soon as you heard those first few beats, it was you knew you were getting a guy that you hated coming out, but you also loved because it was going to be a good match. I don't care if he was in the ring with Skinner, if he was in the ring with, I'm trying to think, other giant Haystacks Calhoun or Hacksaw Jim Duggan. No matter who the hell he was in the ring with, you were going to get a show. He was the 1980s... Dolph Ziggler. I mean, a lot of people compare Dolph Ziggler to Kurt Hennig and Mr. Perfect, and Mr. Perfect was Mr. Perfect. I mean, there was nothing he did wrong. If you go back and watch his DVD, which I highly recommend to anybody who's a wrestling fan, go back and watch his DVD. they did the vignettes to introduce him and had him hitting home runs and him throwing footballs and playing golf, playing basketball. And the amazing thing is he did all of those damn things. Like he did a batting practice session with Wade Boggs, and they said he missed like the first like 12 pitches that Boggs tried to throw to him. And then the camera started rolling. First pitch hit a home run like 10 feet past the fence, and Boggs was just sitting there like, holy crap. Like, this guy, showed absolutely no physical, ability to be able to do this whatsoever. And the second the camera turned on, he was able to hit a home run. So, to me, that just epitomizes the character, epitomizes the man playing it, and this music just really hammered it home. Justin, I know you're a little bit older than Cam, so you probably have more memory of seeing Mr. Perfect come down to the ring and hearing this song. But what did this mean to you?
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, it fit his character perfectly. You know, just the guy thinking he's perfect and everything he's doing, and the music kind of like that, I don't know if you want to call it like opera clash or opera-like, you know, music that he came down to, like you said, just fit everything about him. Like you said, what Dolph Ziggler gets compared to him a lot, I can definitely see it. It's one of those situations where, like, you look back in time and you kind of wish maybe he had a bigger feud or actual, like, pay-per-view main event match for the WWF title at the time against Hulk Hogan. Obviously that was the time of day where wrestlers like Mr. Perfect weren't getting too big pushes, even though you had Randy Savage. But, I mean, they wanted to go with Hulk Hogan, obviously, against guys, and the guys like Ultimate Warrior. But, yeah, definitely, like you said, the Regal music went perfectly with this character, everything that he did, trying to perfect it. And I agree with you with the DVD. I probably actually, now that you mentioned it, I might just stick that in tonight before I go to bed and watch some of those vignettes again. But, yeah, it was a great debut, great build-up for him. His whole character fit that time perfectly as a guy you wanted to boo, who you thought it was better, who thought that was better than you, and his music just fit, like you said, no pun intended, perfectly with his character.
And what about you, Cam?
I'm 26. I'm not that young. My favorite part of that video package was actually the golf shot. I know everyone talks about the hook shot and the home run and stuff. I think, like, the golf shot was, like, the best one. But, like, no disrespect towards him, but I thought he was, in my opinion, the best mid-card wrestler. Well, maybe, you know, top two best mid-card wrestler of all time. I thought he was, you know, definitely one of the best Intercontinental Champions of all time. And, yeah, the music, you know, it stuck really well. It was perfect. It just reminds me of, like, maybe Jerry the King's Lawler music or something like that. Just fits their character to a T.
Yeah, what I find, and it's something that, I mean, Perfect or Henning has a lot of things to his name. I mean, obviously he's a legend. I believe they've inducted him. Yeah, they've inducted him to Hall of Fame because he went in with his father. But if you think back on it, there are so many things that he did throughout his WWF career before leaving for WCW. But, I mean, he managed Ric Flair. He was one of the greatest Intercontinental Champions of all time. He had classic matches with Bret Hart. And like Justin, you said, he did have a feud with Hulk Hogan. And if you go back and look at it, it was actually him who broke the original WWF title that eventually was reborn as the Hardcore Championship that was given to Mick Foley and had a second run as the Hardcore Championship. And that's something that's not really mentioned at all when you think about Mr. Perfect, but if you look at it, he was one of the very first people to ever destroy a championship belt on television. I mean, he just took a hammer and just beat the crap out of the thing until it shattered. And you don't hear about that at all. And it happens very rarely nowadays. I mean, even when they introduced the new WWE title, Rock said, here, take this and put it into the Hall of Fame. It wasn't like he destroyed it. Like how JBL destroyed the Spinner U.S. title or something like that. So it wasn't something like that. It was like he really did take a hammer to the thing and shattered it while Mean Gene Okerlund was trying to jump out of the way of shards of metal and little pieces of glass flying everywhere. But, yeah, there was a lot to Mr. Perfect that I think was left out. And for me, hearing this music just transports me back into that time of being a kid and knowing, and weirdly, like, picturing him, but not only him, but picturing the old school Intercontinental title belt, picturing Bobby Heenan with him and having the matches with Bret Hart, especially the SummerSlam match. And I don't know, it was just, it's one of those songs that is so large, and it just musically, it's just so over the top. Like you said, so regal. And that's definitely what Perfect was. And I'm glad that it does stand the test of time, because it's something that, like, I wish Dolph Ziggler could come out to something like this compared to his generic rock music that he comes out to, because I think it would fit him a little bit more than just the random band that they were able to throw into a studio and change his music every 6 months or whatever it is. But anyway, that was my number five. Let's jump into somebody's number four. Just going at random, whatever this one is. I had to play that one out a little bit longer because there was a giant-ass introduction into that, but go ahead.
That is my number four, obviously. It is Line in the Sand by the band Motorhead. It was the theme song for Evolution. Anybody who knows me personally, all my friends tell you I'm a big rock music fan. I love rock music. It's my favorite kind of music, so that'll be kind of the theme almost of my next couple of picks here. But, you know, I think it fit perfectly for the group at the time. It was came off as one of those... drawing the line in the sand, obviously, with the four top guys that felt like stood out from everybody else in time in the WWE. It played perfectly, I think, into the role for Triple H. I think if you watch the Titantron video, everything that goes about that with the music as well plays off well with, obviously, them partying in high-end clubs, coming out of helicopters, making big entrances. I think the music made them feel like a big deal. I think it's, the words from the song fit the group perfectly. And it fit the faction just great, and it's one of my favorite faction theme songs ever.
What I found interesting is that this song made the list, but Triple H's theme song didn't make anybody's list. And I find that funny. I do like this song. I thought it fit the group. I thought it fit the group perfectly. Like you said, it's a song that it was a little bit slower tempo, but that's what the group was about. It was, they were taking their time because they were the draw. They were the ones that people should be looking up to. But the fact that this song made the list and nobody chose Triple H's theme song, which it could be considered one of the most iconic songs in WWE history, I think it is kind of telling that maybe the game isn't as good as people and crowds react to it. It's more of the man than it is the theme song. But, Cam, what do you have to add to that?
I totally agree with what you said about the Triple H theme song. I'm surprised none of those did, because actually now that I think about it. The Evolution, they were, to not step on anyone's toes, I think it was like a okay reminiscence of the Four Horsemen. They were, you know, living fast, jet flying, all that stuff. It was a really good song for them, though, too, especially, and, I like, did, that was, like, who... I don't know if you guys know what band wrote that. I'm pretty sure the WWE probably paid some good money for that song.
Yeah, it was performed by Motorhead, but I have a feeling
Motorhead.
Johnson wrote it. If I think back correctly, I could be completely wrong, but I know Motorhead performed it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't have too much to say. Like, I don't want to steal anyone's toes, but I wasn't like the biggest Evolution fan.
And it's understandable. I mean, it was a group that launched a lot of careers. It had a decent run, especially for that time when there wasn't any stables. So for them, they really did stand out, and it did launch Batista and Randy Orton into the stratosphere. So, they were a proven commodity, and the music did work for them. I'm glad their run wasn't too long, because this song might have faded into the darkness, kind of, or not the darkness, but kind of faded in its importance, maybe the way that Triple H's theme song has, where it's like, oh yeah, it's their music. So it's in, and for me, for Motorhead, like, I like Motorhead. I like some of the stuff they do, but I'm not a Motorhead fan. I'm not going to go out of my way to see them. I'm not going to go out of my way just to listen to a full album from beginning to end. So for me to hear that over and over and over again might have become a little too much for me. So, but yeah, it definitely worked for their group, and it definitely was a good theme song, especially considering the four guys that were involved with it. But here is the next number four, and I think this one we might be able to cut off a little bit early because it's only a minute long. Okay, so can we guess who the old one of this group is right now? Considering the fact that I've had Mr. Perfect and Big Boss Man's theme song as my 5 and 4 on my list. It's for me, I love the cheesy theme songs. I love these old school 1980s over the top character cartoon, like, just cheesiness. I love it. I don't know what it is about that song. Like, that song I have on my iPod, it's like rated 5 stars or whatever it is. So I'll just be driving down the road one day with my wife and my son in the back seat, and this song just will randomly come on, and I'll be like rocking out and cranking it up, and they'll both be looking at me weird. I mean, my kid's 2 and a half, and he's just like, I don't know what's going on. my kid sits back there, and he'll sing along with a lot of different range of music, like Mumford and Sons, but then he'll also like Seven Lions, so like 12 Stones, so like Motorhead. He'll randomly be singing along with different stuff, but once this one comes on, I start feeling a kick in the back of my seat, like, what the hell are you doing? What are we listening to? But yeah, this is just something that is a really, like, every time I hear it, I picture him in the big-ass, weird, blue... fake officer outfit, going nuts with his nightstick, running down to the ring as a 300-pound guy. I don't know how he made it out into the ring without blowing up. But, yeah, it's fun. It's a cartoon. To me, it was a cartoon theme song. It's like the same thing as listening to, like, G.I. Joe's theme song from when we were little. So that's my reasoning for Big Boss Man. I don't know if Cam or Justin, you have anything else to add on to that one, Cam?
I think, exactly. It's very cartoony, like, and especially the 80s. Or I remember with the Big Boss Man, I still have, like, the comic book with him and his feud with the Mountie. And they came out with, like, a whole comic book about, like, his feud with the Mountie. And, like, it was half the Undertaker and the Ultimate Warrior versus him, the other half was Big Boss Man.
Yep, I had it.
Yeah, I still have it. It just reminds me, like, I maybe brought up a few times in my columns and on this podcast, brings me back to the times where I like wrestling more than the Attitude Era, and quote Bruno Sammartino, Martino, it should be about the kids. I think just the only thing that WWE's lacking these days is just great storytelling, like how we had in the 90s.
Yeah, I agree. It's very, like you said, it's cartoony, but it fit the time of the WWE, you know, with the whole big blue outfit and the nice to come into the ring. Like you said, nothing more to add, really. Just it definitely was cartoony, but I'm the same thing. If I have it on my iPod and it comes on and I start singing it, you know, people probably wonder what the hell I'm singing because they never heard it before. But, yeah, it fits the time, definitely.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where, like I said, I'm looking at it right now. It's a minute and 21 seconds long, and I think I know every single word to it. I've never been to Cobb County, Georgia in my life, but if anybody said that to me, I'd be like, Big Boss Man, that's it. And just go breaking into the song. Like, that's just how it is. I mean, it's that iconic, and it's perfect exemplary of 80s and early 90s WWF was, and I miss that. I miss having things like that. Like, even things like, well, now we get the cartoon characters, we have the Santinos, we have the Hornswoggles and stuff like that, but even those guys don't get cool music like they do, like Big Boss Man or Hulk Hogan or somebody like that had, and I miss that. I wish they would bring that, and I know a lot of that was Jimmy Hart and he's not the company's composer anymore. But God, I wish that would come back, because I think it would break up the shows a lot, and I think it would get not only the kids a little bit more involved, but it would get guys our age where it's like it brings back that nostalgia factor of, God, that was fun. I mean, there's a reason why when these legends come out to their old theme songs that we are so excited, because I was like, that is what we remember. We do remember, like, them coming out to the ring to these cheesy theme songs and thinking they were awesome. And saying that, let's go on to the next number four, because it fits right into that.
We're going to talk about the early 90s and the 90s. And I'll talk about Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Other than the Brooklyn Brawler, probably the greatest enhancement wrestler in the history of professional wrestling. I had
He was not enhancement. He was not. Oh, yeah, he was. But no, he was over. I don't remember Brooklyn Brawler having foam 2x4s. I don't remember Brooklyn Brawler at WrestleCon selling 2x4s autographed for you, which was pretty awesome. I almost bought one, but I didn't.
Well, that's why I said enhancement wrestler. The Brooklyn Brawler was a jobber. I mean, the Hacksaw Jim Duggan was an enhancement wrestler. I think I won up to you with this one, though, Matt. I think I respect Big Bossman's theme, but I think Hacksaw Jim Duggan, his just stands out. Even if you're not even like a hardcore wrestling fan, I think you hear the, you already know who it is. I thought his character like epitomized what the comedic relief of the WWE does not have these days. We talk about Santino and Brodus Clay and stuff like that. It's just a very, very weak attempt at comedy, and I just don't think that the WWE is in tone with what their fans think is funny. But yeah, just one of the greatest theme songs of the 90s.
Wow, you actually think that one's better than Big Boss Man? Wow, I don't know. I gotta have to. We're gonna have to throw to Justin
here.
I think
we have our poll of the week.
Yeah. Let's see, Justin. You're the tiebreaker here. Unless you're just gonna play Switzerland on us. What's going on?
No, I looked at the Big Boss Man's theme song over Hacksaw Jim Duggan's.
There we go.
That one. There you go. 2-1. I think the theme song doesn't do too much for me. It kind of fits in. We kind of had the whole USA thing going too, so there's a little bit. You can kind of get a little patriotic from it there, but I never was a really biggest fan of the outside. Obviously, said the starting it. You know, those things go on every time he comes out. To this day, I was at WrestleCon. Somebody would walk by him, and every single time, somebody would say and he'd immediately turn over and do the same thing. So that part got over. But you know, theme song never really did too much for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, like I said, I was so tempted at WrestleCon to walk up and buy a 2x4, and then I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm going up and buying a piece of wood from a guy, and he's just going to write his name on it. Like, I couldn't really justify that one. Like, there's a lot of random crap that people were selling at that show, but I don't know if I could go up and buy something that a guy just went down to Home Depot and picked up, like, 30 for $20, and he's going to charge me $50 for him to sign it. So, But yeah, like I'm not disparaging the song at all. It really does play. It plays up the 1980s and the early 90s of WWF. Hacksaw Jim Duggan was one of those guys who he was the comedic relief. If you go back and watch his work in the 1970s, he was legitimate. He could go out there and he could work as a big man. He uses the catchphrase the tough guy, but he was a tough guy in the 1970s, and he had a lot of bloody feuds out in the Midwest. But once he got to WWF, he was cartoon character all the way, and this song pretty much epitomized that. Getting away completely from the 1980s, we are going to jump right into our number threes. Looking down. Yeah, this is probably technically this is the newest song on our list at number three. This one. Or not. Maybe. It is just not going. It says it's 15 seconds. Oh, wait. No. Trying again. Nope.
You can just sing it if you want.
Oh. There we go. Wow.
My number three song is the Nexus theme song by the band 12 Stones called We Are One. Again, it is just the song fit the group perfectly. They were walking, obviously, even though they were a group, they were walking alone from the WWE. They stood out from the pack. We Are Young, obviously, a bunch of guys from NXT who were called up trying to make a name for themselves.
Are you going the Mark Henry route and just singing every lyric to us and explaining why it works for the group? Because that would be kind of awesome if you were.
And then obviously, as I said, the We Are One part, they were a group together. I think a group needs a theme song to, help them get over, and that was a good one. It, like I said, I just mentioned a bunch of times, it stuck with the group. I still maintain to this day that Nexus is one of the biggest blunders that the WWE ever screwed up, or if there was the invasion angle. It could have been done so much better, but they just booked it so terribly after the SummerSlam portion of it. It could have been built up, I thought, so that the next year's WrestleMania, Wade Barrett and John Cena, I think, could have been a big main event match outside of their TLC match that they have. I still think, even though he was still new at the time, Wade Barrett could have won the WWE title while he was the leader of the Nexus to make that group even stronger. There were guys that weren't ready for the big time at the time of that group that were the back guys like the Darren Youngs. But, everybody worked together well in that group, and it's just a shame that it kind of never materialized into anything really big or anything bigger than it was, where those guys are just running roughshod over the WWE, kind of in the way the Shield are right now. So that's my number three.
Yeah, what's funny is, I've been a fan of 12 Stones as a band before even their first album, their first EP. They kind of blew up with the Evanescence song from the awesomely horrible Daredevil. But this song kind of came out of nowhere. It was released as a 12 Stone song, and it was actually released and shopped around to a lot of different places. And as I was trying to get it cleared for, if people don't know, I work for ESPN, and I was trying to get it cleared for a project that I was using. And as we were going through the process of getting it cleared, all of a sudden we got a message back saying, oh, it's been picked up, we can't use it anymore, so we have to go with something else. And we're sitting there, we're like, oh, that was the only reason we got for it, and we had no idea what was going on. And obviously a lot of the other people are wrestling fans, they have no idea what was going on. And the very next week on Raw, it was the Nexus debuted with this song. And I'm like, damn it, they stole it. I was like, I had it for this huge baseball project that I was working on. We were going into, the playoffs, so I was like, I had this whole thing, we were doing it weekly, I'm like, this song is perfect. I'm like, it's a team-oriented thing, and it's a full baseball, like, it's obviously, it's a baseball team, so they're working together, and they're going into the playoffs and trying to get in the World Series, and wiped right out from underneath me, and they took it from me, and it was one of those hard moments, because it was like, I didn't realize that many people knew who this band was, and it was WWE just came in and just grabbed it right from me. And just another funny side note, just this past, just not even 6 months ago, probably 3 months ago, if you didn't know, ESPN picked up X Games, and we're doing X Games every 3 months now. So every 3 months, we're trying to fill up new material for the different events and for the different shows. And I was getting a bunch of music cleared, and we got a bunch of stuff from Sad Robot, which is a band based out of LA that I know, and a bunch of stuff from Soul Switch, who was on the same label as 12 Stones at one point, and Like a Storm. I got a bunch of stuff from them. So I have random people that I go to when I have projects, and this one agent sent me a bunch of stuff, and it was a bunch of things by a bunch of tracks by Seven Lions, who are coming out with an EP. And I was like, oh, wow, this band is fantastic. I'm like, I want to get Born to Run cleared and Courtesy cleared and Emergency cleared, and we'll be able to throw them into a different video package for the X Games, because their sound, it's a kind of not rap rock, but it's similar to that. When I say rap rock, I always think Limp Bizkit, and they're not like Limp Bizkit whatsoever. So I don't really want to throw that stigma on them. But yeah, so I was trying to get that cleared. And again, it was a week before we were supposed to start airing it, and they were like, okay, well, we got Soul Switch, we got Novus Day, and we got Sad Robot cleared, but we can't get Seven Lions. They just got picked up by Sony distributor, and I guess they have something planned for them. And that night, I went home, and I saw a promo for SmackDown using Born to Run. And I'm like, you sons of bitches. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, the fact I'm sitting there on my couch, and I'm just seeing the promo, and I'm like, wait, what the hell? And I'm like rewinding it. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, not only did you do this once to me, but twice, and to top it all off, and anybody who's ever read any of my articles or anything like that, the reason why I was fired from WWE was because my work wasn't good enough and I wasn't up to par with WWE standards. These are two things that WWE basically took that I was going to use for ESPN. So, yeah, my stuff's not up to standards. I don't have a good enough eye. I don't have a good enough ear. My work's not good enough. Whatever their reasoning was, obviously, I knew it was bullshit when they gave it to me. And now I'm, like, once I left there and I started airing montages and then seeing them use the same effects that I've used, them doing it over there, now they're seeing the music that I'm getting sent to me first. And now, because our process takes longer, we're a little bit bigger company, being Disney, than WWE is. So it takes a little bit longer for us to get stuff cleared. They're able to sweep in and get this music cleared quicker than we can. And I'm just sitting at home and I'm just seething. And I'm like, son, I wanted that song so bad. And now you're using it as a theme song to your damn show. Like, you're kidding me. But besides the point, Nexus with the We Are One, I love this song when it came out with it. I love the song. I love the song when 12 Stones put it out. I love the fact that Nexus used it. I thought it fit perfectly for their group, and then they killed it. I think they killed it for me because the way they booked Nexus, like you said, they butchered it a couple times with the way they started it. They started it in like the chorus that sometimes. Sometimes they started it with the beginning of the song, like we played it here, where it starts weird and really slow. And so for a wrestling group, it's got a great chorus for the wrestling group, but it takes a lot of manipulating to get a song to fit something perfectly. And as an editor and a sound engineer, you understand that, and it takes a lot of work to do that. And it seemed like that once they decided to use this song, they didn't really know how to utilize it the correct way. And by the time they were able to start using it the right way, Nexus was already starting to fade pretty quickly, because they was already getting towards that SummerSlam moment and they're at their peak, and then all of a sudden Sheffield's hurt, Young's out of the group, they had already released Daniel Bryan at that point. Like, they were losing, people were dropping like flies. So that was a tough moment, and it felt like this song could have done a lot for the group if utilized properly. And I think as a song on its own, and looking back in history and seeing the song paired with this group, I think there's a lot more for it than actually seeing it play out on television. Cam, you have anything to add after my nice long rant about WWE?
No, I think you probably pretty much said everything that could be said.
All right, in that case, let's go to the other number three. Hopefully this one works. Okay, I played 10 seconds of that thing, and I think everybody knows what it is.
Yeah, that's my number three, Stone Cold. Sorry to everyone out there. I hope I get a couple comments about why isn't this higher up? Why isn't this higher up? I think, yeah, Stone Cold probably epitomized, you know, one of the better entrance songs. You just knew who it was. I think that after, once you get past the whole thing, just kind of like The Rock, once you get past like the first 30, 40 seconds, it's kind of just like, okay, just turn the song off. But that first 30 or 40 seconds is really an impact, and I think regardless of what anyone's doing, and I think even if he came back, he probably would get the biggest pop in, like, the history of professional wrestling if he ever made it back for, like, a match, not just necessarily an appearance, but a match. But, yeah, it's my number three, and Stone Cold, Steve Austin.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's very repetitive. I mean, looking at the running time right now, it's only a minute 30 seconds because it just repeats. I think what really helped this song, obviously, was the opening. That's all anybody really heard. Because once you heard the glass shatter and you heard those first downbeats, the place was so loud you didn't hear the music. And you also had JR and King on commentary. It didn't matter what was playing in the arena. It didn't matter what his song sounded like because nobody could hear the damn thing. It was so freaking loud. So all this song really needed was that opening and those first couple chords, and they were solid. And that's a mark of a good entrance song. That's the song that gets people out of their chairs. It gets people screaming. And if you can't hear the theme music, you know you hit it big. Because that way, people are reacting to it. People know what's happening, know something special is going down. And the rest of the music really doesn't make a difference. Justin, you have anything to add?
No, I completely agree with that. It's one of those things, like I said, where when the first note hits, you know exactly what's coming out. When that glass shattered, you knew it was awesome. Like you said, a lot of times you didn't even hear the rest of the music because when that glass shattered and everybody just jumped out of their seats and they were as loud as possible, especially during the Attitude Era. So definitely one of the more recognizable songs.
Yep, and I'm going to go with another one probably, it's another one of the newer version, but a newer song in WWE, and I'll just go ahead and say this is my number three since we already did your two. I have voices in my head, they count to me, they understand, they talk to me. That's my number three. Obviously, it's Voices with Randy Orton. Another song that was by a rock band, the rock band Reb Theory. What's interesting about this song, for me, one, obviously, it's that same idea of the Stone Cold where it's that first couple seconds and you know what it is, you know who it is. What I found interesting, they introduced this song when he was a heel, and it still got a massive pop anytime you heard this song come on. And then once he turned babyface, it was just insane if you were in the arena. But what's interesting about this, his very first song, which you could actually hear a little bit of at the very beginning of this song, his very first entrance song as a singles competitor was a Burn in My Light. And it was very kind of poppy. It was a little pop rocky. It worked for him because he still had that baby face looking. He was like 24 years old. He was got cocky. He was still a member of Evolution. So it worked for him. And while I was working there, they got clearance for a new song that was much more hardcore. It was very screamo, punk rock, very, very hard. And he came out to it once on SmackDown and came back through the curtain, and we actually heard it in the, not in the truck, but in the control room at WWE. We heard, he's like, I hate that. And I don't know if he had heard it before or he had never heard it before he walked out, but he walked back into the back after his match. He's like, I hate that music. Give Me Back My Old One. So it was, and the funny part was that song was eventually repurposed as CM Punk's original theme music. That was his theme music for the first, I think, 4 years he was with, 4 or 5 years he was with WWE in ECW and then eventually going on. But that music was, and you think about it now and you're like, oh, that fit Punk perfectly. That was very hard and very screamo and punk rock. And that was originally Randy Orton's theme music. And it did not fit him whatsoever. Obviously, he knew that. Obviously, he knew it wasn't going to work. And they had to go back to the drawing board. And when they went back to the drawing board, it was when the gimmick of him having the anger disorder where he blacks out and things happen and he doesn't know he did it, quote-unquote, though it turned out to be a ruse. The whole idea of voices in his head and not being able to control his actions, hence DDTing Stephanie McMahon, RKOing her, things like that. So it was interesting. I liked this version a hell of a lot more, obviously. It really worked for his characters, and it's just become a part of him now. I don't think many people even remember his first theme song unless you go back and listen or watch his old matches and see him as a younger kid. But as an adult Randy Orton and as the adult superstar he is, I think this theme song fits him to a T. Justin, you have anything to add to that one?
No, I agree with you. It definitely, you know, fits his character very well, like you said, compared to his first one that he had, Burn in My Light. You know, that wasn't great. It kind of, I think they're trying to go a little more corny there with him. I don't know. Yeah, Rev Theory is one of my favorite rock bands, so I'm a fan of their work. I like the song, of course, not next to it. Not every single week we get the classic Michael Cole singing that Orton's hearing voices in his head. But definitely, as you said, definitely fits his character overall.
And Cam?
Yeah, his fits the character really well. Yeah, as you said, I'm trying to remember his original theme music. I mean, it'll come back to me, but yeah, it's just something that sticks with him and it'll probably always be his theme music as long as he's with the WWE.
Yeah, it was the whole, hey, nothing you could say, nothing you could blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
Awful. Yep, see, there you
okay.
go. Automatically, okay. It's just, okay, that's awful. Yep, so this one, obviously, this is a song that Orton, when he goes down in history and retires, obviously, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. This is the song they're going to play. This is the one that he's going to be remembered for. It's his version of Triple H's The Game. This is him now, and I think it's a good choice. It's something that really backs up his character, and it does get the crowd going. It's something that it really gets people out of their seats. That was my number three. Let's move on to number twos. This is where we start getting a little dicey because this is where we start getting a little bit in arguments. But let's go with our first number two, which is kind of out of nowhere. It surprised me when somebody submitted this one. Okay, whose was that? I'm not going to say anymore. Whose was that?
Oh, sorry. I was waiting for you. Yeah, that was Goldust number two.
Wow, you did not even pay attention to the show, and I'm playing your own song? Jeez, oh, God, thanks.
No, I thought you were letting it go out a little bit longer. I was imagining like the titles in my head and stuff, like the 24-karat gold presents and stuff. I thought, like, if I'm kind of on a theme of like character wrestling, and I thought that song was very Goldust. He was flamboyant. He was Hollywood. He was the Uber heel. I mean, just remember him stuff giving those flowers to Razor Ramon and like stalking Razor Ramon in kind of like a homoerotic way. I thought that song was just like perfect. And even if, I mean, still like it'll get pop for him now. Like remember the Royal Rumble when he came out and that music hit, and people just went insane. Just almost as much as when Chris Jericho came out number two. So yeah, I just thought it fit well into this because I thought it was just all about his character and it fit very well.
Yeah, Justin?
Yeah, no, I was definitely surprised when I saw that on that list. I mean, I think it fits the character well, but as far as top five, I was surprised to see that on anybody's favorite list. But, you know, Goldust is obviously one of those attitude-era characters that just, you know, stood out in the WWE at the time. It was one of the first ones, too, that, like, really kind of started crossing the line with kind of some of the stuff he was doing with the whole, like you said, giving flowers to Razor Ramon and giving his head in some weird ways that you never really saw before. But, yeah, I think the music, like you said, for his character, just surprised to see on the top five list.
For me, it was one of those, like, yeah, I was surprised to see it on the top five list. But I think what's diminished it over the years was the different variations they've had of it, especially when he went through the whole artist formerly known as Goldust and everything else. Yeah, this one was the one that started it all, and it was the one that people remember him for. But it is also, again, one of those repetitive ones, and it is that cartoony version of it, but I don't think it's so over the top that it's up there with the Hacksaw Jim Duggins or the Mr. Perfect and things like that. But it was, like, I can't hear that beat or any of that twinkling without thinking Goldust. So, yes, it was very iconic for him. And I wouldn't be in my top five, but I could definitely see it ranking up there. It's going to be one that people remember, and like I said, you hear the beginning of that and you know who it is. It's not one that you really have to think too hard about. Here's the next number two, since we are cutting down a little bit on time, so we're not going to plow through these, but we're going to get through them with the next number two on the list. That one going until I heard the lyrics. For me, I honestly didn't know if I had grabbed the one with the lyrics or one without it, but the lyrics, I think, sell that song completely. And it's not even my number two.
I'm still rocking out to it over here on my end, so I thought it's good. I think it is. But that is my number two Demolition's theme song. High impact kind of rock guitar going on there. Definitely fit their style. They weren't a flash team like the Rockers. They were like down on the mat, hit you with power moves type guys. Definitely fit their whole look, their whole persona, causing pain, obviously, with Demolition. Like I said, good fit for them.
Yeah, for me, it was always the lyrics. It was the, here comes the axe, here comes the smack. Like, how generic can you get? Like okay, these are the guys' names. Let's throw them into the song. So I love the fact that they were able to just, like, go, okay, I got nothing. Let's just throw their names in there and just pretty much say what they're doing. It was very, very 80s. And obviously they were the WWF's version of the Road Warriors, but they do have an identity of their own. And I think that theme song is one of those theme songs where you go back and you listen to it and you just got to smile because of, one, how cheesy it is, and two, it does epitomize these two guys, and you just got to smile when you hear those lyrics, especially. Cam?
Yeah, it definitely does epitomize the 1980s. I just, if you look at videos now, because I know they make some, like, few independent appearances here and there, and to watch them come out to that music nowadays is even better, because now they're just, you know, twice their age, like, still coming out, trying to be these Kiss-like, aggressive, tough guys and stuff. So I just think, yeah, it's a great song. It just epitomizes wrestling in the 80s. That was just really fun.
Oh, God, it's got to be scary to see them come out now to that theme song. Honestly, as hard as this is, it's sad that Crush is not part of it, but even if Crush was still with us today and was working on the indie scene, I'd want him to come out to the Kuna Crush. I wouldn't want him to come out to the Demolition song. But that's just my preference. But let's jump into my number two, which obviously, once people hear it, you'll understand why this is the most controversial number, the controversial song on the show. But here we go. If I can hit play right. was just up to me, I'd be playing that for the rest of the show, but it's not. So, but that's my number two. That's Cult of Personality with CM Punk. The only reason why it didn't make my number one is because it's not an original WWE theme song. That's the only reason why it didn't make number one. I've been listening to this song since I was a kid, so the second I heard Punk come out to it, obviously it fit him absolutely perfectly. I'm not going to be like Justin and go through every single lyric and see why it appeals to this wrestler. But yeah, listen to it and you know exactly why it fits CM Punk. When he debuted with it and when you saw that it was going to be his permanent theme song, I couldn't be happier. It's one of the greatest rock songs, I think, of the modern age. It absolutely gets you off your ass. It's perfect for him. It's perfect for a wrestling crowd. Obviously, we saw WrestleMania 29. These guys can still go. They can still belt out that melody. I love the fact that they were able to get this song cleared for him. And yeah, it's not, the only reason why it's number two on my list is because it's not an original WWE song. It was a rock song first that they repurposed for WWE. But besides that point, top-notch song, top-notch character to pair him with, and by far probably one of the best wrestling songs and wrestling character matches I've seen in a long time. But let's throw Justin first because he was the one that gave me the most crap about this.
Yeah, like I said, because we said at the beginning with the disclaimer, this is it was first come, first serve. This would be my number one if it was on my list because, like you said, completely matches the character overall. When he came out to it, it was one of my favorite songs before he debuted to it. And when he came out with it, when he was coming back from Raw, I was ecstatic to see that he was paired up with a song. I mean, I know, I believe he had used it on the indie scene before, but to have the WWE get a song like that, something that wasn't their original making, and saw a song that was pretty big and be able to get that cleared, was a pretty good job by whoever's probably was able to get that done. But I know I give you crap for not letting you use the map. I follow the laws of dibs. I have no problem following the laws of dibs like that. So, as he said, it fits the character well, perfectly.
And Cam?
Yeah, I totally agree. Just we probably all would have put it in our number one slots and just changed the name of the show to the CM Punk Mark podcast. But just great song. One of probably the better songs for a character of like the PG era. I think it's right up there with John Cena. Once you hear it, you know who it is. You know who it's for, and it fits this character perfectly.
And see, that's why I went with this not having doubles on it, because I just knew we would all have this song and probably all have it at number one. So I was like, nope, screw that. We're making this different. I want 15 different songs. There's no way in hell we're all doing the exact same song as number one. We've done that too often. But anyway, that was my number two. Let's quickly jump into number ones. We're running a little bit short on time, but we'll be able to get through these number ones pretty quickly without any issue. Here's the first one.
That was my number one. Obviously, it's the NWO's theme. Like I said earlier about Hulk Hogan, if Hulk Hogan was the song of my kid years, the NWO theme song was the song of my pre-teen, early teen years, where that's when everybody was big into wrestling. All my friends were watching it. We were all loved the NWO. It stood out from anything different at the time for a wrestling theme song with all the different cuts that it had into it and the early dubstep, if you want to call it like that. But it was one of the first of its kind theme songs when it came out.
I'm surprised this became your number one simply because of, being a rock fan and this being such a ripoff of Jimi Hendrix. That for me was probably the only reason why. That and anytime I hear it, I just see Hulk Hogan playing the air guitar on the belt or his weightlifting belt, and it just makes me cringe a little bit. But But yeah, I mean, obviously it's an iconic song for a wrestling fan. It's one of those top songs. It's right up there with Steve Austin. It's the Attitude Era. It's huge. But like I said, I just had bad memories of it just because I kind of get skeeved out with the way Hulk Hogan would always come out with it, and then I get the flashback of when he came out with the Zack Ryder fake hair with the headband toupee thing that he had during one of those matches, which was weird too. I don't know why that just flashed into my head, but see what I mean? This song brings back creepy memories for me.
Yep.
Anyway, Cam, what do you have to add to that?
Creepy memories, it's weird. I guess it kind of reminds me of how, like, The Shield is. It's kind of just, like, not like a full song. It's kind of, like, cuts and pieces and bits in there. I think it fits their gimmick pretty well, and I thought it fit pretty well, and it got all those fans behind it once the music hit. It was good for business, I guess, for the NWO, even though the NWO was kind of bad for business. So it was kind of a catch-22, I guess.
Yeah, eventually it was just kind of like, oh, wait, okay, this sucks. But but yeah, like I said, the NWO obviously major point of wrestling history, and obviously a fitting number one. Here's our second to last number one. I will go with. That is my number one, and obviously it's Bret the Hitman Hart. It is the original Bret Hart song. It's not the Hart Foundation song. It's not the 90s Hart Foundation or late 90s Hart Foundation song. It's not the remix Hart Foundation song that Jim Johnston did when he came back in 2007 or whatever it was. No, it's the one that made him famous. It's that guitar riff at the beginning, and then it's just repetitive the rest of the time. But it's the same thing as Steve Austin. It's that opening. People went nuts once they heard Bret Hart's opening guitar riff and went in, and you knew Bret Hart was coming out. For me, Bret Hart was top three favorite wrestlers of all time. Hearing that music, it made me sit up a little bit closer, made me get closer to television. That was the music that I wanted to hear, and I was excited to have him coming out to the ring. So that's my number one. Cam, you have anything to add to that one?
No, like you said, it's just, I think they were getting to in this top five, just where, as long as you know, if you had a great first 15 seconds, then you know it was going to help you get over, and I think that really did help Bret Hart's character. And I thought it was a good song just because he could use it as a heel on a babyface, and it really didn't change. It wouldn't really change anything too much.
Yeah, that's very true. Justin, anything?
I just agree with Cam. Like you said, seems like one of the things on the list is you got a really good first 5-10 seconds opening of the song. It obviously worked out for you, and it did with Bret Hart.
All right, and our last number five, or last number five, our last number one. Maybe the cheesiest one on our top five. Yeah, I would say probably the cheesiest one on our top five. I think this one surpasses Big Boss Man, which I thought was the cheesiest. But no, I think this may be the cheesiest, but also the most iconic.
I think I'm cute. I know I'm sexy. I've got the look that drives the girls wild. I've got the mood.
The man sings his own damn theme song. Okay, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that's my number one. That's Shawn Michaels' Sexy Boy. I think to me, other than Hulk Hogan, Shawn Michaels kind of epitomizes professional wrestling, and Bret Hart as well. I think he just is perfect as a heel, as a babyface. I think he just, whatever was asked of him, he knew what to do. I mean, I think Dolph Ziggler is trying to follow in his footsteps, even though his facial expressions aren't quite as how Shawn was, how Shawn could sell pretty much anything from anybody, and I thought the song was like perfect. It just fit his arrogance, especially like the mid-90s, later 90s Shawn Michaels, where he was the cocky guy, where he'd wear the short shorts and stuff. So I thought it was perfect, and yeah, definitely my number one.
Yeah, for me, it was I thought it was always funny, as apparently it's World War III at my house. I thought it was funny. Not only did Jimmy Hart make him sing his own theme song, but they had Sensational Sherry singing for her when she was part of it, which made sense. That was fine. That was fine for him as a heel. But not only that, he kept the same theme song throughout his entire career. I give him massive, massive respect for that, because here comes out a 40-year-old guy coming out to the song Sexy Boy. That's hard to pull off. And if you don't have the confidence, you don't have the charisma to pull that off, it's not going to work. And he was able to do it for over 20 years in the wrestling business, probably 20 years just using over 20 years just using that song. And it's transcended wrestling generations. I mean, there's kids who only knew Shawn Michaels from 2002 on and had no idea about the original part. For them, the song might have been a little bit weird, but it did last that long. I give him credit for being able to stick with it the entire time, not wanting to change it up. Sure, he used the DX song here and there, but for the most part, he stuck with it. Justin, you have something to add. I know this is your all-time favorite wrestler, but what about his theme song?
Matt, my favorite all-time wrestler. Like you said, for somebody to stick with the same music that long as he did, props for him. He makes it work, you know, obviously with his gimmick. Like you said, definitely the cheesy part of it. Kind of weird. I remember I watched WrestleMania 28 last year. Watched wrestling before. I said, well, that's my favorite wrestler right there, Shawn Michaels. And when he came out to his music, they said, What is going on right now? None of them got the theme music. I just like, I guess you gotta be a wrestling fan to like it as much as somebody like I do. But like, they were all kind of weirded out by the theme music. They thought the same thing was one of the corniest things they've ever heard. But definitely with the gimmick, he made it work. It surprised me. He kept it going for this long. And but my favorite wrestler ever is one of the cheesiest. One of my favorite ones too as well.
Yep, I agree. I mean, it's one of those things where it's so bad, it's good. And that's all you got to really go with on that one. And honestly, it's deserving of being a number one. It's like I said, so bad, it just has to be good. And the fact that he was able to keep it for that long and have the balls to go out there every single night being the age he is and be fine with using that music really does say something. But anyway, that's our top five. We will be posting a list of them. I'm sure we're not going to be posting a link to the music because I'm sure I've broken about 900 copyright laws just playing the music on the show. Hopefully we didn't play it for too long, so it's not too bad. But anyway, that's our top five. Next week, we have something a little bit special going on. We are having a special guest on our show. We will be having back again Rob Schamberger, who is the artist that is painting all of the wrestling champions in wrestling history. We did an interview with him about a month and a half ago. I myself already have two pieces of his artwork hanging up in the office. I have another one coming. He graciously decided to come back onto the show for a special top five. We are doing top five greatest or favorite ring gear / outfits in wrestling history. Should be interesting. It's could be cheesy. It could be elaborate. It could be awful. It could be Dolph Ziggler's little skinny Speedos. I don't know. We're going to find out next week. I think Rob's going to be a great addition to our cast. He's going to be able to lend his little artistic insight into some of these maybe spray-painted RVD looks or Ryback singlets. Who knows? We'll find out. We'll be doing it again next week on Thursday at 8 o'clock. Top five wrestling gear / outfits, and we hope to hear from you guys. I am going to play us out with our most controversial entrance on the list, and we will see you guys next week. Personality. I know your anger.
personality, because I'm personality.